On it is October 1st, 2014. This is the Board of Public Works for the State of Maryland. October already here. As we begin, I ask the Treasurer or the Comptroller if they have any opening thoughts or comments.
Let me just say, Governor, one very personal note. I noticed the unveiling. I saw the unveiling of the portrait of Frederick Douglass, which is a wonderful portrait done by a great artist, Simi Knox, who I would point out to everybody not only did this great portrait and one of President Clinton and a number of others, but did the portrait of former Treasurer Richard Dixon, which is in the reception room at the Treasurer's office in the Treasury building. It is the greatest portrait I think I've ever seen. So anyone who is interested in great portraits, and particularly those among us who remember Richard, really ought to come and look at this wonderful, wonderful picture. And it's great to see Simi Knox doing so well, and you can understand why we take a personal interest.
That's great. And as long as you're mentioning that, I want to thank let everyone know that as a people, we have to thank Sylvia and Eddie Brown for very generously commissioning Mr. Knox to do a top-notch job. And Frederick Douglass will greet every school kid that takes a tour of the governor's residence of Maryland now. Whenever they walk in that front door, he's right there. Mr. Comptroller?
Yes, thank you, Governor. And Madam Treasurer, a couple of weeks ago, when we were last here, it was the day after the Orioles and the Nationals clinched their division titles. And I hate to repeat myself, but how can we not keep talking about these wonderful baseball teams in the upcoming Beltway Series? With both teams beginning their postseasons this week, the Orioles tomorrow, the Nats on Friday, it's hard not to catch baseball fever in Maryland. I, for one, can't wait to sit down with a cold beer and watch our two teams try to make the Battle of the Beltways a reality, something only a few years ago was absolutely impossible. In fact, I watched two teams last night, Kansas City Royals and the Oakland Athletics, I have no interest in, just to get warmed up. But can Nelson Cruz, Adam Jones, and J.J. Hardy slug their way to the O's first World Series title since 1983? Can the Nats' incredible pitching staff capitalize on the momentum of that amazing no-hitter and circus catch final out on Sunday to bring the crown, the World Series crown, back to D.C. the first time since 1924? Think about that. Walter Johnson was pitching then. Calvin Coolidge was president. Yep. I'm sure he attended the games. Though, look how far we've come as a game, a state, a nation, with everything that's going on in the country and the world. I would recommend that as Marylanders, we just sit back and enjoy all the excitement in the region. And as comptroller, I'd love how much the O's and Nats in their postseason will actually provide to the Maryland economy. I've mentioned that it's like one of those satellite photos from outer space that you can see things on Earth. When these two teams are successful, trust me, I can see through the data from the economy that Marylanders are happy and they open up their wallets and they shop, and that's good for the economy. So it certainly promises to be a fall that baseball fans in Maryland will never forget. Thank you all, and best of luck to those of you who bleed either orange or red. It's a good time to be a baseball fan and a great time to be a Marylander. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. Sure is. All right, let's begin with the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 20 items on the Secretary's agenda. There are 4 reports of emergency procurements. We are withdrawing item 9 from the Department of Housing and Community Development. We anticipate that item will return at a later date.
Okay. Any questions? Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Natural Resources, real property.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Emily Wilson with Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 5 items on our agenda today. Of note, actually, is I would say item 5A. It's an island acquisition in the Potomac River. It's about 275 acres, all told, one large island and three smaller islands that are right next to each other. It is also right next to Oxley Island, which is already owned and managed by the department. There are about 30 islands in the Potomac that the department owns and manages as part of Wildlife Management Area System. All told, in the Potomac, believe it or not, there are 452 islands. This scored a 116, which is extremely ecologically significant, and we're actually acquiring it at a pretty decent discount of 24%.
Emily, I'm embarrassed to ask you this, but where exactly is it?
It's about a mile north of where White's Ferry is.
Okay.
And it's actually right, there's a rural legacy
yes.
area, in the Montgomery County section there.
Right. Sort of my backyard, which is why I was there.
Beautiful area.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what number was it?
5A.
And you always have great maps. The Maryland Green Print.
Mm-hmm.
And what did this rank on it, on the ecological ranking?
It was a 116.
That's high.
That's very high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Mason's Harbor. This is a... My map's upside down after I praised your map, though. Good fish. And I think the north and south on it's wrong.
White's Ferry is sort of
at the... I apologize. It's right. It's just up where the Potomac loops around.
Right. Okay.
And it was across Mason's Island that James Madison crossed on his way to Brookville after the burning of the White House.
I did not know that.
Do we give any points for historic value?
That's interesting. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Emily, what's the other red island in the south? You know, offhand.
Which map are you looking at? To the just to the north?
Just to
the
north.
The one that's shaded red is Oxley Island.
No, I'm looking at the next page. I think that page that you just
mentioned.
Yes. See the little red thing?
That's the island
south of there.
I do not.
Oh, no, I see what it is. Sorry. That's what happens when you read over someone's shoulder. No, it's the top of the...
the interstate sign?
That is my backyard. That's why I
wanted to. That's the same sign.
No, I got it. Thank you. It's a great location.
Nice and silent.
That's okay. Great.
In fact, the guy that owned it was, I think, the son of the famous James Mason, Virginia Mason.
Okay.
Okay, any questions? Controller moves approval. Mm-hmm. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to
Thank
the
you.
Department. Thank you. A budget management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 18 items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for the day. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Controller.
Item 2S, please, Madam Secretary.
Certainly. Item 2 is a contract to provide review services for the evaluation of an application that's submitted to the Public Service Commission that requests approval of an offshore wind project. And from the Public Service Commission, we have Robert Kane and Marissa Passer.
Yes, ma'am.
And yes, your name?
Andrew Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Apparently, we're being asked to award with this contract a three-year, $1.3 million relationship to a Boston-based firm named Levitan and Associates, under which it would evaluate applications that come into the PSC for approval of a proposed offshore wind project. I have a couple of questions about it. First, what exactly is Levitan going to do that amounts to $1.3 million worth of work?
Good morning.
And let me just say as background, excuse me, that you know, the briefing material, the reason I asked the question is that it says what the contractor is going to do is prepare for and assist in the evaluation of applications so that the commission may approve, conditionally approve, or deny application within 180 days of the close of an application period, and that to properly discharge these duties, the contractor, quote, shall be available by phone and email to respond to the contract manager within 2 days of a request for information. Obviously, important work, but it sounds as if they are being hired as a supporting role in what is essentially a single specialized executive review. So I'm particularly interested in what the maximum number of hours per week is that the PSC expects this consultant to devote to the project, how many members of the Levitan team have been assigned, and frankly, from the briefing, it seems like an awful lot of money for kind of a standby support.
Yes, sir. I believe I can answer all those questions. My name is Marissa Paslik. I'm the commission's advisor, and I'll be managing this contract for the commission.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. What is your position with the commission?
I'm the commission's advisor.
Do you work for the commission?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
First of all, the $1.3 million price tag is really split into two parts of the contract. The first phase, which is the $613,000, it's the fixed cost that goes to the pre-application tax and the other fixed price items such as establishing the communication protocols and hosting the website and developing the OREC price schedule, which facilitates the submission of their applications. The remainder of that contract, which was submitted to you, was based on the idea that five applications would be received, but there is no minimum or maximum number of applications that the commission may receive per statute. So we asked the applicants to provide a price per application reviewed, and so really that $614,000 is the fixed price, and then for any application that we receive, it's $136,000. So the 1.3, the 136,000 is fixed per application, but if we only receive one application, that's all they receive. So it's not necessarily the 1.3 million. For reviewing each individual application, they have to assist us with several tasks that the statute requires the commission to do, including assessing whether it's administratively complete, meets several statutory minimum threshold criteria, and then they have to assist the commission in doing a qualitative and quantitative evaluation so that by statute the commission is required to only approve something that provides net benefits, economic, environmental, and health for the ratepayers of Maryland. And that includes using some sophisticated ratepayer impact models and other models that also have licensing associated with them. So the number of hours a week that the PSC expects the contractor to work is however many it takes for them to get it done. It's a fixed price contract, and the hours per week will vary depending on the stage of the evaluation process that we're in. Levitan has assigned 11 team members to this, which was in the range that the other applicants proposed, between 10 and 12. And I think I covered your questions, but please let me know.
What made this respondent technically better than all the others?
So we received four applicants for this scope of work. They were the second highest financially. The one that was ranked, the one that was the most expensive, the committee considered to be technically capable on the same level. However, they were ranked higher, which is why they were put aside. The two applicants that ranked that were less expensive, the committee felt that the technical expertise and their understanding of the statute and the statutory requirements that the commission would have to fulfill were inferior to what Levitan could provide, especially because of Levitan's track record working for the commission and helping us to develop the regulations.
So you had the feeling they understood the law better? Is that the technical difference?
I wouldn't put it that way. They have a better understanding of the ratepayer impact models and how to derive the RPS percentage and aspects, how to put into practice aspects of the law that were not demonstrated by the other applicants.
Yeah, no, I'm glad the treasurer mentioned that, because I'd like to ask also about the cost, which you brought up and that she quite appropriately asked about. I did notice this contract's for $1.3 million, and there's a firm called Jacobs Consultancy out of Houston that came in at roughly half the figure.
Yes.
$650,557.
So Jacobs only submitted a portion of the price bid that we requested. We requested that they submit their fixed costs and their price per application reviewed. They only submitted their price per application reviewed, which was comparable to the other ones that were submitted.
And a firm named Axum Energy Ventures out of Wilmington came in just slightly higher at $670,418.
Yes, sir. Their price per application reviewed was also in the same range as the other submissions. They offered just under $110,000, and Levitan came in at $136,000. The difference between the prices there were the subtotal of the fixed cost, which went to the pre-application task. The committee felt that firm did not put forth a proposal that captured all of the pre-application tasks that the scope of work was requesting.
Okay, that's a great explanation, because I have no idea what this consulting company is going to be doing. None. Zero. I mean, really, you have explained it, apparently, and I tried to follow it. What are they going to be doing?
Sure. So the first thing that has to be done is the statute was very prescriptive in the elements that the commission has to consider when approving an application, but did not provide any further guidance about how to do that evaluation or how to weight it. So when it boils down to it, the consultant is going to have to assist with the qualitative and quantitative evaluation of those applications, which look at the net benefits on for the environmental, the health, and the economic cost to ratepayers. There were ratepayer threshold tests that were included in the statute that the consultant is going to have to help with, which includes doing projections on the energy market and looking forward in a way that is required to determine the net benefits of the application.
Could I just say that one would have no idea of that or the answers to the comptroller's other questions from reading what is before us?
And, welcome to the energy world.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really don't understand why that information wasn't in the remarks to start with.
We have a hard time sometimes with plain English.
Nothing personal, but I mean, I wouldn't know it if we hadn't asked you these questions.
Yes, ma'am, I apologize for that.
Now, I've really noticed, and one of our strategic goals has been renewable energy, and the other is reduction, the conservation programs, and I've rarely seen, even in transportation, Jim, this doesn't happen. I've rarely seen a group of people that develop their own nomenclature and acronyms and take as much pride in speaking a separate language that none of us can understand. It's remarkable.
Yes, sir.
We're not trying to be mean here, but what the treasurer and the comptroller says is absolutely true. It's almost as if I don't know why it happened, but it makes other people feel like you must be hiding something if you can't say it in English that the vast majority of us can understand. It's like pulling teeth. I mean, even when we tried to encapsulize just for constituents, you know, how we've done what we've done on energy, you really need a new app or something that can act like a translator app. Which makes it harder for those of us that are generalists to be able to build the consensus for the better decisions, but right decisions that give us a more secure and sustainable energy future. Truly. So,
if I could just thank you, Governor, and I applaud your advocacy for wind power. Obviously, wind power is something we all aspire to. And if there's anyone here that can help me with that beleaguered project on the Lower Eastern Shore from the state perspective, because I continue to be bewildered as to why that project is held up, but that's not what we have before us here. Did the PSC go back and ask for an explanation from the folks that, I guess, in your opinion, had inadequate applications and asked for last and final best offer based on what you wanted?
We did. We requested best and final offers, and we also offered the opportunity for debriefings with the contract team. Unfortunately, none of the non-winners opted to have a debriefing with us.
Why were they responsive if they didn't answer the entire RFP, essentially? Is that what you're saying? That at least that one left off base fixed cost. Why is that? How is that responsive?
Responsive to
the RFP.
The RFP.
My opinion is probably because this is a new area and there are not that many companies that specialize in wind power.
No, I'm not asking why they didn't do it. I'm asking why they weren't found non-responsive.
I'm not sure why.
Oh. They didn't.
Pretty much, I believe that they
We were given. I contacted them as the contract manager and offered the opportunity for them to correct that. What we found was lacking from their presentation when they weren't when they didn't provide that second piece the second time. They continued to submit the price application that only had the one piece on it. We felt like the rest of their application did not merit further consideration given its comparison to the other applications. And I think in an overabundance of caution, we evaluated their application but still found them to be the least qualified of the four submissions.
Okay. I mean, I'm not an expert in procurement law at all, especially PSC, but I would think if they didn't respond to everything that was in the RFP, then they didn't respond. I mean, but you didn't choose them anyhow. So.
Correct.
And presumably their financial bid would have been significantly higher if they had responded as was appropriate?
I believe so, because they only responded to the portion of the bid that asked for the price per application reviewed.
Right.
And
I got that.
I'm sorry.
You asked for two things, the base
and the
per application, and they just didn't submit.
Right. And I presume that their bid would have been much higher because there were additional tasks in the RFP that would not have been incorporated into the bid for application reviewed.
Thank you. I'm not sure, honestly, except for your very candid response, that was an answer. But okay.
So, any other?
Madam Secretary, yes, Governor, if I could, is there anyone here from the Department of the Environment or someone who knows something about my favorite wind project down in the Lower Shore? We're talking about wind power.
Well, they were all out late night.
They're all out.
The Truett Awards.
Okay.
I
don't think anyone's here.
I don't think anybody's here. We can certainly have someone contact you.
Thank you. And I applaud, Governor, your advocacy for that project, because it's still mystifying to me as to what the problem is.
And when last week we had checked, it was what?
The commissioners down there apparently now are in some kind of backroom negotiation. And so I just find the whole thing to be...
This is one our federal friends held up.
Well, this is one where we're basically chasing this private sector company and their $200 million project, telling them to get the heck out of Maryland, and it's a shame because the farmers down there get lease payments. And it's what you have so admirably championed, which is renewable wind energy. But, hey...
Apparently Congress has more expertise than the Navy does, and they're being directed to say that it interferes with their radar, which was actually, I think, a bigger national security problem, because then any of our enemies know that in order to make their countries impenetrable by naval air radar, all they need to do is surround themselves with windmills.
Anyway, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? All right. Any other agenda items on the DDM portion of the agenda?
No, but I'm going to quietly vote no against this.
Okay. This is 2S.
This is
2S.
I do have a question about another one.
Yeah.
Unless you want to take this one out first. Okay. I don't.
Yeah, okay. We'll call item 2. I move item 2, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. The Comptroller votes quietly. No. Okay. And the ayes have it. We move on now. Treasurer has a question.
I just had a question. Yeah, on 4S.
Yes. So item 4S is a contract to manage the statewide travel management program for executive branch employees who are traveling throughout the country. Larry Williams is here from the Department of Budget Management.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Williams, my question is a very basic one, and that is, How do you measure? I see that the virtue of having this contract, according just to what I read, is that it allows you to make take care of situations in a fee waiver program, such as name changes on a ticket and trip changes, which are performed at reduced fees or sometimes without a fee. To be fair, in many cases, without a fee. Is that why we have this contract, for those very, I hope, outlying situations?
No, that's one part of it. Our contract is basically designed to make sure that we get the lowest logical fare, that people don't go out and get business class tickets, that they get, you know, a ticket because they like a particular airline. And this way, this contract ensures that every ticket that's purchased, we purchase about 5,000 a year, is reviewed by someone at Globetrotter, who is our vendor, to make sure that that was the best ticket available at that time of purchase.
So you actually go in and do essentially a post-audit or
yes, our contractor does.
I have to tell you the reason I ask. This is just a personal thing. When I travel, and it's not that often, but when I do on state business,
mm-hmm.
We get the Globetrotter or the service. It's Globetrotter at the moment. And then I go on the Internet to find a ticket, which is almost invariably less expensive. And I just wonder how that works.
Well, ticket prices change by the minute sometimes,
right.
And sometimes you can go on in the morning depending on what day.
Yeah.
But
you do look at that.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
That's my question. This is
yes. Absolutely.
Okay, so it's just fortuitous that when I do it.
Right.
Okay. But I do have a wonder about it. I mean, I understand it in principle. It's just that when the rubber hits the road, I hope you actually are looking at this and making sure that we do get our money's worth.
Absolutely.
Out of this. And I'd love to hear, like in 6 months or something, how this is done and what you found. Would that be possible?
Yes, ma'am.
And this falls under which department?
Under the Department of Budget Management.
Under DBM.
Yes. And that travel and fleet program. Larry is the director.
How long have you been there?
22 years.
Huh? Who owns Globetrotter?
It is a Maryland-based company. Mike Butner is the president. It's out of only Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Great place.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else?
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on the balance of BBM 10-9? Control and lose approval. Second by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. We move on now to the University System of Maryland. We'll no doubt be updated on their efforts to put up a Frederick Douglass statue at College Park.
Let me start by introducing myself, Jim Sterling, for the University System. Good morning. We have 7 items on today's agenda, and I'll start with the Frederick Douglass question, if that's okay. We do not as yet have a statue. We have commenced design on the Frederick Douglass Plaza, which is budgeted at $375,000, and it's near the Hornbeck Library with papers, benches, new landscaping, lighting, and a site for a statue. The statue itself we don't have yet.
Have you been able to contact those folks that were doing one for the Irish Frederick Douglass project?
I don't believe that contact has been made yet.
Okay, let's make that happen, Nina. Help me follow up on that. We might get a twofer, you know. It's a good statue.
Just so happens I was in Ireland about a month ago, and I intended to go looking for it, but I never made it out of Dublin. Too many other things to do there.
It's down in Cove. It's down in Cork. I think. No, I don't think it's up yet. But the design for it will be in Cove. Now, I need to fact check me on that, too. Okay.
Maybe Mr. Salt will have to go back to check it out.
I'd be happy to go back and check it out.
Anything in particular you want to emphasize here?
Fairly routine.
Any questions? Controller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you.
Thank you. We would be moving on to the Department of Information Technology, but they have nothing on the agenda. So we're going to move past the Department of Information Technology and move to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. Secretary Smith, on behalf of MDOT, we have 21 items. Item 14, RP, is being withdrawn and will be reintroduced on a future DNR agenda. Be happy to answer any questions.
Just like for the record, to reiterate my admiration for the Secretary. I think he's got a lot on the agency's plate, and he's handling it magnificently. So I'm all for Secretary Smith. But item 1C is another one of these single-bid awards for $2.2 million, I guess, for repairs to the Daly Garage. And it was resulted from a competitive sealed proposal, which resulted in only one single responsive bid. And so we've approved in the last 4 years 250 single bid contracts with a total value of $750 million. On the current agenda, there are 5 more single bid awards with a total value of $9 million. The Procurement Advisory Council apparently met and sent a letter to all the agencies brainstorming, I guess, straightforward ways to seek more participation. And they recommended reviewing solicitations with an eye to requiring only what is required, not relying solely on e-Maryland Marketplace, doing Google or other Internet searches, personal contact, picking up the phone and asking companies to bid, letting vendors know that they're welcome to bid, encouraging them, encourage more direct solicitation, industry trade associations, survey other procurement officers in other states, I take it, or other jurisdictions, publicize forecasts, encourage agencies to accept electronic submission of bids and proposals. And I'm not quite sure what kind of intensive effort is required to result in more vendors, but I would certainly like to urge MDOT, but also all the agencies, to meet face-to-face with the vendor communities and find out what's inhibiting the bidders, because it's, and obviously this is a generic problem, Mr. Secretary. I just took advantage of your item to bring it up again.
Well, I agree with you, your overall policy of having competitive bidding. There's no doubt that that is, from a price perspective, a critical element of any RFP. In this case, however, we had eight bidders who submitted bids, and we had a protest that was filed on March 26th of 2013, and that was denied. And then we had another protest that was filed on October 11, 13, and that was denied and was appealed to the Board of Contract Appeals and was just recently denied. And the other five bidders refused, because of the passage of time, to hold their bid price. So with regard to this contract, that is the explanation for how we ended up with just one bid. That is not to denigrate from your concern about only having one bidder. We are concerned, and there are a number of contracts before you today that, for one reason or another, ended up with just one bid. I think there's like three other ones on here. And it doesn't make me happy, obviously. I've looked into them, anticipating that you would rightly raise the issue. But because of the nature of some of the RFPs and because of individualized circumstances with respect to the particular vendors involved, sometimes we end up with just one bid. But no, that doesn't mean that the procurement generally should not be striving to make sure there's competition in the bids that are being requested.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Madam Secretary, perhaps you could keep us informed about efforts of how the Procurement Advisory Council and other advisory groups, whatever it is that we can do to remove impediments to bids. I'm not sure who, whether that is you or someone else, but...
I think the child has been working on it.
Yeah, yes, sir. We continue to talk about best practices, but I think one of the most effective tools is the bully pulpit of the Board of Public Works and your continuing efforts to bring this up as a serious problem. So I thank you for continuing your efforts, and we will continue to carry your message.
And because of that, we did meet with the airport last week and had good talks about these things, and we're going to do more reaching out. I think your instructions about perhaps the agency's meeting with contractors is well placed, but we as a board are going to just do some more roundtable, brown bag discussions and bring people in from other agencies just to talk on this topic. We have gotten some research from the certification agencies, organizations, that is on this topic. I don't think it's just a Maryland problem. I mean, it is a government procurement. So we are going to handle that. But Ms. Child is completely right. The more the extra Board of Public members let everybody know that this is their priority, the more we can work on this.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions, Department of Transportation? Hearing none.
Just for the record, Jim, 15, item 15, looks at first glance as though we're paying significantly more than the appraised value of the property, and I'm sure there's a reason.
There is a reason. That property is positioned exactly where we need to put the ventilation system shaft for the red line. And when I say it's exactly positioned, there are two other properties that could be utilized but they are very successful businesses that would cost us a lot more than even what we're paying for the property that we have to acquire. And it has to be in that area in order to meet the technical
health
needs.
And safety.
Yes.
And the reason you settled on 550 as opposed to less?
Is because he wanted four times, or they wanted four times, and we got him down to about two times, and that's as far as we could get them to go.
Yeah.
And the FTA has approved the acquisition.
Okay. Let me just ask outright. Yes. No, we don't have to. I think the answer is that's the price of the mortgage on the property.
Yes. Good morning, George Fabula. I manage the real estate division for the MTA. We're tasked with acquiring the properties for the Baltimore Red Line and also the Purple Line as well. The 550 is the mortgage that the property
has. My question is, how is the amount set? And the answer is
this is the mortgage. It's underwater mortgage.
And it has to be in that position.
Yes.
I get that.
Glad the treasurer brought this up, because what's the point of having an appraisal? Why don't we just go to the landowners in these situations and say, what would you be willing to take? I mean, really, the fact that it's underwater doesn't concern me at all. In fact, it was appraised at half the amount you're paying, and...
Well, we went to his mortgage company to negotiate a price that was lower than the remaining balance, and that was we received a strong response that they wanted to get paid in full, basically. So we went to the mortgage company looking basically for a short sale, and that was rejected by them.
Uh-huh. And who is his? Who's he?
The property owner.
Yeah.
Is Mark Saperstein.
Okay. Well, he's very prominent, obviously, but. Building's only worth half of what we're paying.
Well, there is some exposure.
What about eminent domain?
We could do that as well. The property itself was slated. The property on the right is the 114 East Lombard Street. That's the subject property. The property to the left is 108 East Lombard Street, which is a city-owned property. It was planned to combine those two properties together at one time for a hotel in that area itself. The city pulled out on a deal for 114 East Lombard Street. That was the consideration for the property, the 550, pulled out on a deal. There is some exposure, I think, to the state. If we did go to court on this, that we may be on the hook for the 550 and then maybe some on top of that as well.
Well, I'm glad the treasurer brought it up because...
Right. Yeah. I assume you factor in the cost of litigating.
Yes.
It's a nice looking property in the slide.
It could go a lot higher. So there was a proposal that would have taken it to a much higher density in keeping with that section of the downtown there, which is right off Calvert Street as you're going north. And that deal fell apart because the city pulled out of it?
That's my understanding.
And prior to that falling apart, somehow somebody borrowed $550,000 on properties that in their current condition are only worth $250,000.
I think it was rented at one time. It was an occupied building. It wasn't an abandoned building or unoccupied. I think it was...
It was an Indian restaurant.
Okay.
Pretty good, too.
Mm-hmm. But we do have the Brookshire to the right, which is, as you know, a hotel. And then to the left, we have some... occupy commercial properties, and also CVS is on the corner as well.
So the buildings itself only do it $250,000, but it's actually a pretty valuable parcel, right? I mean, in the middle of downtown.
And has been before the recession.
And those aren't historic?
No. That has not been.
It's not on the registry based on our research.
Oh, gosh, I'm telling you, buddy, soon they will be.
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right. Anyone else have questions on this?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
Mr. Controller.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Treasurer, thank you for bringing this up, because exactly it
it's difficult.
I mean, if this were a okay, I would like to register my objection and just vote no on this.
I have to say, Governor, that was my first inclination, but hearing more about it and understanding the impact actually of the state's and city's action on the value of that property, which is now going to be very difficult for, I assume, to be used for another purpose. And one hopes with the economy returning will not go cheaper. And being interested in the health and safety of people who ride the subway, which is the most important thing, if the red line, in fact, is developed.
Madam Treasurer, when the red line.
And the health and safety of riders of the purple line as well, I'm going to reluctantly support it. But it strikes me that the cost of litigating, you don't have quick take, right?
We quit taking them. The state moves their standard eminent domain process.
Okay. Thank you.
And you're in charge of all the red line acquisitions?
And purple line as well.
Purple line. And the red line, are there other properties that have been acquired like this for twice the appraised value?
Well, so far what we're taking to the board has been the subsurface easements for the Cook's Lane tunnel. Those have been, those are a small consideration, but they are basically going for the fair market value. We are finding out that the commercial owners along the Baltimore Red Line are negotiating for above what the fair market value is. They're holding out and negotiating for as much as they can get out of us. So we're continuing those negotiations with those property owners.
How many of those are there?
For the operations and maintenance facility on the west side on Calverton, we have four or five properties. Not many full acquisitions associated with the Baltimore Red Line.
Well, I'm not necessarily angry with you guys. I'm just frustrated with the situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
All right. Unless you take them to court.
Okay.
And then you've just got to figure out the cost benefit.
Mm-hmm. And we're trying to meet schedule as well.
Yeah, and they know that.
This is really not an unusual situation.
No, that's
with condemnation.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, when they know that government wants or needs a particular property, it's a challenge to negotiate something that they will sell for. And then if you don't do that, you have to go through the condemnation, which is fine. But then you have the issue of time, and you also have the issue of you really don't know what the cost is going to be.
I understand that Patrick Moynihan said the problem with urban redevelopment is everything's already connected to everything else. So it's, you know, it's not like it's a green field or a highway right of way.
Do you ever give any thought to using condemnation as a cautionary example?
Sure.
I used it all the time.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, we're doing
so
that.
So you weigh each individual
absolutely.
Case.
Yes.
And the time frame for condemnation is what?
It can be about 12 to 18 months altogether.
That's why some governments who were able instituted a process of quick take for other types of...
Yeah. Quick take is a huge help in the area of condemnation because that is the little leverage you have with respect to the negotiations with property owners. Who also have to undertake expenses if they go the condemnation route. So, but you can't use quick take except in.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact remains, for the better,
you're building the subway.
Yeah, well, and we're a nation that affords due process to
to individuals and their property rights, which is all good and proper. It's not an excuse for us not to go about public projects in the most timely, responsible, and cost-effective way. But it's why they open. It's part of the reason they're able to open new subway lines every year in Shanghai, and why it takes us a little longer here. But
I'm not suggesting that we adopt Shanghai.
Nor am I. I prefer on balance, blue sky and freedom.
No, but I think the governor makes a good point. But on the other hand, I think the public would be a little bit upset if here we are putting in public infrastructure and we're being held up by demands for prohibitive costs from property owners who know darn well the building is not worth what we're paying for. And so.
But there's a combination of things here, I think. I mean, that with respect, and I understand you may come up with a different conclusion, and that's why there's three of us here and not one. But it seems to me there's a couple of things that go into this consideration and negotiation. Certainly, there's the need for the infrastructure. That's one. Secondly, this property, were it not for our need for that location and that parcel and the other ones around it. I mean, you look how tall and new the buildings are around it relatively, or I can tell you, I will proffer to you that the other buildings around there are mostly filled, although there is that little stretch back there up Calvert Street, but I think that's under contract with somebody now.
I think it is.
Were that property to be developed to its highest and best use, it would be a lot more valuable than $550,000. And then the third thing is that knowing the engineering challenges we have and the likelihood that if push came to shove, we would have to go to condemnation there, we have scared away potential other developers from developing it at its highest and best use. And I think it's the swirl of all three of those things that could make some lawyers very happy to litigate. But all three of those factors informed, I think, what the Department of Transportation came to on that.
Thank you. I'm not unsympathetic to this particular situation, but you mentioned there are four or five other properties where you're going to get the same, stubborn refusal unless you raise the amounts the public's going to pay. And all I'm saying is, I kind of agree with the treasurer that why don't we start litigating some of these things? Because it's not just expensive for us. Mm-hmm. It's pretty gosh darn expensive for the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that'll stimulate, some more. Leaving this one aside, because I think the governor made some idiosyncratic references about what this project, why this was a little different, but sure sounds like it's a pretty tough climate out there. And how do you get a good deal for the public, given these landowners? And litigation's expensive for them, so let's put the burden over on them. We have lots of lawyers. Don't we use our own in-house lawyers?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Point taken. Thank you.
Let's start flexing our muscles. And because if every time, I've heard it over and over again, we're doing these things because we don't want to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
And those are mostly on other things. But feel free to go to court. Seriously. And thank you, Governor.
Thank
I could
you.
Be marked down as a no on this one.
Okay, this is one. What number was this?
15.
I'm sorry?
15.
15? Is there a letter after it or anything?
It's 15 RP, thank you.
15 RP on the Department of Transportation Treasurer moves approval, seconded by Governor. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? Controller votes no for aforementioned reasons. How about the balance of the transportation agenda items? Anything there? Okay. Controller moves on the balance of the agenda items on the transportation. Seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. First shall be last, and last will be first. Doing great service Mr. Al Collins.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Al Collins, Secretary of the Department of General Services. Today we have 30 items on our agenda. We'd be glad to answer any questions. Governor, if I could take just a second of the board's time. We do have a number of individuals out there who are doing great service on behalf of their communities and service. Let me, first time ever up here before the board is representatives from the Antietam Fire Company in Washington County, represented by Mr. Cavaliers here. Your first grant to National Capital of the Nay Housing Assistance, Joe Bartson. Joe, you still in the room? And thirdly, first time here, Jewish Community Services, Baltimore County, Barbara Gaudette, one of the most exciting DSS directors I've ever worked with in another life. And also, Governor, we have a couple other people that took the time to come in this morning. Linnell Bowen, Creative Maryland Hall for Creative Arts. Mary Gallivek for Pregnancy Aid Center, Prince George's County. And I think that's it in terms of our citizens that joined us this morning.
Awesome. Thank you all for being here and for your good work. Any questions?
Move approval.
Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And then that concludes the Board of Public Works. Thanks very much.
Actually, that's awesome. Did I win power?